When G. Edward Evans and Holland Christie wrote Managerial Leadership for Librarians, they weren't just creating another management textbook. They were addressing a critical gap in professional literature. While countless business leadership books crowd bookstore shelves, few acknowledge the unique challenges faced by library managers operating in public and nonprofit sectors. This book has become a cornerstone text in library science programs nationwide, with the American Library Association citing it as one of the most influential works for emerging library leaders. What makes it particularly valuable is its recognition that libraries operate under fundamentally different constraints than for-profit businesses, a distinction that many traditional management approaches fail to address. Libraries operate primarily in nonprofit and public sectors where success measures are more complex than profit margins and revenue growth. This fundamental difference affects management approaches across 25 major areas. While for-profit CEOs enjoy considerable decision-making latitude, library leaders require governing board approval for significant changes. The nebulous goal of providing public good creates accountability challenges, as libraries must be judged against citizens' expectations for justice, fairness, efficiency, and effectiveness. Public libraries face particularly significant constraints. They operate with tax-based funding rather than sales revenue, follow fixed budget cycles with limited flexibility, adhere to mandatory procurement requirements, and serve legally defined populations. Their existence stems from legislation with narrowly defined purposes, unlike the vaguer articles of incorporation that allow private businesses adaptability. Risk-taking is discouraged, staffing follows civil service systems, and dismissals are complex. Interestingly, despite widespread government distrust, libraries enjoy unusually high public confidence. A 2006 public agenda study showed 76% of respondents rated libraries' performance as excellent or good, significantly outperforming other public agencies, including police departments, 68%, and local governments, 43%. This social trust represents a fragile but essential foundation for library credibility. Nonprofit organizations like academic libraries occupy the middle ground between private and public sectors. Their existence stems from IRS status, articles of incorporation, and bylaws that define their purpose and structure. Contrary to common belief, research shows nonprofit and public sector employees often demonstrate less organizational commitment than for-profit counterparts, suggesting library managers need to pay special attention to staff morale and engagement. Have you ever wondered why implementing change in libraries seems to move at a glacial pace? It's not just bureaucracy, it's by design. Library managers have substantially less freedom of action than their for-profit counterparts while facing more stakeholders with diverse viewpoints, requiring both managerial and leadership skills to build consensus. Leadership is particularly crucial in libraries because they serve broad societal benefits, where almost everyone has a stake in their functioning. Unlike for-profit managers who have greater freedom to act unilaterally, library leaders must navigate complex consultation, comment, and consent processes involving stakeholders with divergent views and interests. This includes working with board members, local government officials, community groups, staff unions, and diverse patron populations, each bringing their own expectations and demands. Leadership theory has evolved significantly from early 20th century trait-based approaches to more nuanced behavioral models. While trait theories identify leadership personalities like charisma, decisiveness, and integrity, they don't explain how people actually lead in practice. Post-World War II research introduced the concept of leadership styles, autocratic, democratic, laissez-faire, providing a framework for understanding different approaches. Situational leadership theory further revolutionized our understanding by recognizing that effective leadership varies by environment, particularly relevant in libraries where leaders face situations ranging from daily operations to crisis management, from community outreach to technological transformation. Effective library leadership requires several core skills that must be consciously developed and maintained. vision tops most lists. Without it and followers, one leads nothing. This involves not just having ideas, but creating compelling pictures of future possibilities that inspire others to follow. Communication is equally vital. Even the most compelling vision fails without effective articulation through multiple channels and to diverse audiences. Building solid, trusting relationships with followers creates consistency and predictability, essential in public institutions. Other essential skills include creating collaborative environments that foster innovation, developing staff through mentoring and professional development opportunities, sharing power appropriately while maintaining accountability, balancing consistency with adaptability in changing circumstances, planning effectively across short and long-term horizons, making sound decisions based on data and stakeholder input, taking calculated risks while managing public resources responsibly, and maintaining genuine optimism in the face of challenges. Determining your leadership interest requires honest self-assessment and careful consideration of personal goals. Begin by creating comparative lists of what you want and don't want from your career, considering the significant time commitments required at higher organizational levels. The higher you move administratively, the more evenings and weekends will be consumed by representing the library at functions, meetings, and conferences. This might include board meetings, community events, professional conferences, and fundraising activities. Compare your abilities against your actual capabilities, recognizing the difference between understanding how to do something and being willing or able to do it effectively. This includes assessing your comfort with public speaking, conflict resolution, budget management, and political navigation. Leadership skills can be developed through targeted training and deliberate practice. You're not simply born a leader or not. While some individuals are natural leaders, many more become effective leaders through dedicated effort and continuous learning. Workshops, seminars, and courses help develop leadership skills, especially when sector-focused, but require sustained time, effort, and practice to be effective. Successful library leaders often combine formal training with practical experience, seeking out opportunities to lead projects, committees, or initiatives that build their capabilities incrementally. Professional associations, mentorship programs, and leadership institutes specifically designed for library professionals provide valuable development pathways. Effective communication is essential yet challenging, with miscommunication occurring when receivers misinterpret messages. Beyond the obvious spoken and written channels, great communicators recognize nonverbal communication, listening, graphics, and feedback as crucial channels. Noise factors like language, culture, and personality further complicate understanding, even among those sharing the same native language. Connection and persuasion are deeply linked. You're less likely to persuade without first establishing connection. Even perfectly logical arguments with indisputable facts can fail when focused too much on content, what, rather than delivery, how. Robert Cialdini identifies five principles underlying effective persuasion. Liking: people tend to like those who like them. Reciprocity: giving praise yields better performance. Social proof: people follow those like themselves. Consistency: people follow messages from consistent sources. And authority: people follow directions from perceived experts. Library managers must communicate with numerous external groups, including vendors, maintenance staff, users, funding agencies, taxpayers, politicians, consultants, boards, professional colleagues, granting agencies, donors, regulators, and society at large. Each group requires adjusted communication approaches, and even seemingly unified groups like governing bodies contain internal differences requiring persuasion to achieve consensus. When communicating with funding agencies, the budget justification narrative, written, oral, or both, critically impacts operations. When circumstances change, managers may need to request permission to shift allocated funds between purposes. However, flexibility varies by budget format and agency rules. One consistent limitation is that salary funds typically cannot be reallocated, even during staff vacancies, as funding bodies employ salary savings concepts that anticipate staff turnover and factor unspent salary into fiscal planning. Effective listening is an underappreciated communication skill that requires practice. most people can hear about 4 times faster than others speak, leaving ample time for the mind to wander without conscious concentration. Managers must understand filtering processes that affect message transmission, leveling, dropping parts of messages, sharpening, adding extra meaning, and assimilating, retaining original meaning while adding new meaning.
Establishing ongoing connections with supporters builds long-term power in organizational settings. Authority, influence, and power form the foundation of managerial leadership, determining how effectively you can implement change, secure resources, and advance your library's mission. Authority comes from positions above yours and carries specific rights, making decisions, directing activities, planning changes, and giving orders to staff. While these rights exist, great manager leaders use them sparingly, instead employing leadership skills to motivate staff and gain their input. Authority flows downward through delegation, which requires giving full authority to carry out assignments while retaining ultimate accountability. Though often triggering negative reactions, power itself isn't inherently bad. It's how it's wielded that matters. In the workplace, power should function as influence, getting people to work together toward defined goals. Managers in nonprofit and public sectors should recognize that influence is their most effective form of power. Power comes from 5 sources: legitimate, positional authority; expertise, knowledge and competence; referent, others wanting to associate with your success; reward, ability to provide benefits; and coercive, ability to punish. Building connections with others by showing genuine interest in their thoughts, concerns, and values helps establish influence. Almost everyone has some power when viewed as influence, though it must be actively sought rather than passively received. Within organizations, not all units have equal influence regardless of sector. Library and information services organizations typically rank among the least influential units unless leadership makes serious efforts to increase their persuasive powers. Authority and power carry consequences through accountability and responsibility. In American society, those with authority are answerable for how they deploy power and the outcomes of those actions. When accepting a management position, you take on assigned duties with the power to execute them, along with responsibility for performance and accountability for results.
Almost every organization has some type of board structure, though their composition and selection differs across sectors. For-profit boards are typically elected by shareholders or selected by senior managers, often creating cozy relationships between board members and executives they supervise. Nonprofit boards are usually elected by stakeholders and supporters, while public sector boards are almost always appointed through political processes. Nonprofit and public sector boards operate in 3 modes: fiduciary, focusing on effective use of funds rather than stockholder wealth; strategic, planning organizational advancement; and generative, thinking outside the box for vision. All boards have 3 legal duties: care, attending and actively participating in meetings; loyalty, acting in the organization's best interest without personal benefit; and obedience, supporting the organization's vision, mission, and goals. Boards have numerous responsibilities, including hiring the CEO, overseeing finances, setting policy, monitoring programs and board performance, assisting with community relations, influencing public policy, fundraising, planning, assessing CEO performance, serving as a sounding board, assisting with educational activities, and protecting the organization from outside pressure. The key distinction is that governing boards decide, while advisory boards recommend. A board's fiduciary responsibilities include supporting budget requests through preparation and defense, monitoring expenditures, and assisting with fund allocation. Different library types have varying board structures. School libraries typically have governing boards, academic libraries generally have advisory boards, and public libraries may have either type or both. Boards should establish policies at the highest, least specific level to avoid micromanagement. As John Carver noted, policies are always more specific than if they had not been said, and less specific than they might have been. Policy-setting duties span formulation, assessment, replacement, and abandonment, areas where boards and staff may conflict over control. Effective meetings require meticulous planning, especially with volunteer board members who value their time highly.
preparation is essential. Limiting agenda topics prevents rushed discussions and frustration. Meeting timeframes should account for topic complexity and anticipated differences in opinion.
Libraries without clear direction may survive, but won't thrive. Mission and vision drive planning and goal setting, which in turn drive strategic activities. While missions rarely change, vision statements must evolve with the environment. Unlike for-profit organizations, nonprofit and public libraries face constraints on their vision and mission due to their accountability to multiple stakeholders. Vision statements are future-oriented documents that should be aspirational yet grounded in reality. Effective vision statements are idealistic, match organizational values, reflect professional standards, generate enthusiasm, remain brief, and provide distinctive direction. While looking ahead, vision statements should be informed by the library's past achievements and current capabilities. Strategy represents how a library achieves its mission, not a plan itself, but a thought process about what's required to achieve objectives and whether those objectives are realistic. Strategic planning connects mission, vision, and strategy, while strategic management involves implementing that plan through leadership actions. Goals must be formulated with organizational capacity in mind, challenging yet achievable within realistic resource constraints. A research library aiming to never borrow materials from another library would be unrealistic. Library operational capacity encompasses 8 categories: people, staff, volunteers, and board, organizational structure and culture, operating budget, supplemental funds, physical facilities, technology, assessment activities, and service community relations. The planning process typically generates more goals than a library can simultaneously pursue, making prioritization essential. Setting priorities is time-consuming and inherently political, involving bargaining and compromise across partisan, organizational, and personal political dimensions. The process should begin by reviewing vision, mission, values, and strategy documents to ensure shared premises. Strategic management differs fundamentally from strategic planning. It's a daily activity rather than an occasional one. Effective managers must engage in strategic management with or without a formal strategic plan. Strategic management has 2 dimensions: strategic stance, how the organization positions itself and interacts with its environment, and strategic actions, specific steps to operationalize that stance.
Libraries have survived for over 4,000 years by continuously adapting to changing environments. The ability to monitor and respond to environmental shifts is essential for organizational survival. While libraries have traditionally conducted community surveys and needs analyses, these often focus narrowly on specific questions. Environmental scanning, ES, provides a broader, more comprehensive approach that, once established, can be maintained as an ongoing process. Change is inevitable, but challenging to implement successfully. Research shows approximately 70% of planned organizational change initiatives partially or completely fail, with public sector organizations facing particular challenges due to political and regulatory volatility. Wise managerial leaders develop contingency plans for likely developments, such as emergency response plans that must be regularly updated to reflect organizational changes. To enhance success in change management, leaders should listen to resistance, which can provide valuable feedback, develop logical cases for change, outline benefits while acknowledging potential negatives, provide support for transitions, and address legitimate concerns about new skills needed. Libraries must engage in environmental scanning to understand external forces of change and develop effective responses. An effective scanning program should involve all levels of the library structure, not just senior managers. The library environment can be conceptualized as 2 spheres: the inner sphere, consisting of direct contacts, and the outer sphere, encompassing everything else. The inner sphere includes the library's organizational culture, OC, which significantly impacts service quality and performance. Problematic cultures manifest through low trust, poor staff relationships, limited policy training, discrepancies between stated values and actual behaviors, and low morale. The outer sphere contains numerous components affecting library operations.
Historical context matters, as past events can interact with new developments in unexpected ways. Geography and transportation affect service delivery, particularly for commuter campuses and distance education programs. Legal changes require consistent monitoring. While major changes usually receive attention, small regulatory tweaks often slip by unnoticed.
Like symphony conductors coordinating musicians, library managers must assess and coordinate various groups to achieve quality outcomes. Unlike orchestras, libraries face multiple daily public performances with no rehearsals or do-overs, and diverse users may evaluate identical transactions differently. Public and nonprofit organizations must repeatedly prove their value to stakeholders and supporters, something for-profit organizations rarely face. Library users who find services unsatisfactory still must pay to support them through taxes, potentially creating opposition. The constant threat of privatization looms if performance is questioned. Assessment is a perpetual activity for managerial leaders who constantly evaluate their environment against expectations. Catherine Newcomer explains that stakeholders increasingly demand public agencies measure not just outputs, but outcomes, the actual impact of government efforts. This creates a love-hate relationship with assessment for most librarians. Involving stakeholders in assessment efforts provides valuable evidence for external decision makers and supports creating a participatory library. There are five progressive levels of stakeholder engagement: informing, for transparency; consulting, listening to concerns; involving, ensuring input matters; collaborating, jointly interpreting data; and empowering, allowing stakeholders to make decisions. Various tools exist to assess library performance, each with strengths and weaknesses that must be understood before implementation. The selection of assessment tools should be based on careful consideration of costs, benefits, and how the resulting information will be used, rather than simply copying what other libraries have done. In recent decades, stakeholders have demanded evidence beyond input and output statistics, asking, "Did we get anything of value?" and "Prove your worth." These questions require more than statistics, focusing on how libraries analyze data, identify learning goals, conduct and use satisfaction surveys, assess accomplishments, incorporate results into planning, and link goals to community needs. Libraries can no longer rely on being viewed as an unquestioned public good. They must demonstrate their impact.
Money underpins virtually every aspect of library operations, though perhaps not the most important thing in the world, as George Bernard Shaw suggested. Since the Great Recession, libraries have learned to operate with reduced resources, a situation shared with most public and nonprofit organizations. This new reality has forced library leaders to become increasingly creative with resource allocation, seeking alternative funding sources like grants, partnerships, and community foundations. Four major differences distinguish public nonprofit budgeting from for-profit approaches: purpose, process, decision-making, and accounting. While for-profit organizations focus on revenue generation, public and nonprofit sectors must maximize effectiveness with limited resources. For-profits can adjust pricing structures freely, while public organizations depend on taxes and fees that aren't easily increased. Additionally, nonprofit organizations must maintain transparent operations and demonstrate clear public benefit, often requiring extensive documentation and justification for expenditures. The library budgeting process follows a fairly standard pattern regardless of format: revenue projection, announcement of preparation guidelines, budget request formulation, justification sessions, final approval, and implementation. The process typically begins with governing bodies estimating revenues and setting expansion, contraction levels before passing guidelines down through organizational levels. This cycle often starts 6 to 8 months before the fiscal year begins, requiring leaders to forecast needs well in advance. During justification sessions, department heads must defend their requests with data-driven evidence of impact and need.
Effective fiscal management requires year-round attention across multiple budget cycles simultaneously. Leaders must track last year's performance to justify new requests and maintain operational flow, monitor current spending through financial control systems that track obligations and expenditures, and plan strategically for future needs. This includes maintaining detailed usage statistics, patron feedback, and outcome measures that demonstrate return on investment. Monthly reconciliation of accounts, quarterly performance reviews, and regular budget adjustments are essential practices for maintaining fiscal health. Every organization has a financial culture where units compete for their share of finite resources. Your primary obligation as a leader is securing necessary funds for your unit's operations and, when appropriate, advocating for increased funding. Success requires understanding both the formal budgetary process and the informal organizational culture surrounding money matters, knowledge that typically takes at least a year to develop when joining a new organization. Building relationships with finance departments, understanding approval chains, and learning historical funding patterns are crucial skills. Successful library leaders also develop expertise in presenting compelling budget narratives that connect spending to community impact and organizational mission. Smart financial leadership involves developing multiple funding streams, maintaining emergency reserves, and creating contingency plans for various financial scenarios. This might include establishing friends groups, pursuing grants, developing fee-based services, and building community partnerships to supplement traditional funding sources. Regular environmental scanning helps identify both potential financial threats and opportunities for resource optimization.
Libraries increasingly must supplement their basic funding through fundraising, facing intense competition from other nonprofits, educational institutions, and charitable organizations for finite donor resources. The Great Recession fundamentally transformed library funding models, making fundraising almost essential for maintaining core services and staffing levels rather than just supporting occasional capital projects or special collections. This shift has required libraries to develop sophisticated fundraising strategies and dedicated development staff. Understanding demographic patterns of giving is crucial for effective fundraising strategies. National giving tendencies reveal complex interactions between multiple factors, including gender, age, education level, marital status, income, employment status, nationality, and family status. Some patterns challenge conventional wisdom. Males typically give larger individual donations than females, though females often give more frequently. Middle-aged professionals, 40 to 60, tend to give more substantially than seniors, contrary to popular belief. And households with children at home generally contribute more than those without, despite having higher expenses. Regional variations and local community characteristics can significantly influence these patterns. Donor motivation extends well beyond basic demographics and financial capacity. While tax deductibility is important, research shows it's rarely the primary driver for charitable giving. Andreoni's widely accepted framework identified three broad motivational categories: public good theory, donors who believe libraries provide essential societal benefit and knowledge access; exchange theory, individuals feeling obligated to give based on past benefits received or organizational relationships; and warm glow, the emotional satisfaction and personal fulfillment derived from giving. Understanding these motivations helps libraries craft more effective appeals and develop longer-term relationships with donors. Professional fundraisers typically focus on three primary giving categories, each requiring different approaches. Impulse giving, small, spontaneous donations that can accumulate significantly over time, often through online platforms or point-of-service opportunities; appeals, solicitations, formal, structured requests like foundation annual letters, capital campaigns, or targeted grant proposals; and planned giving, long-term arrangements requiring careful cultivation, such as bequests, charitable trusts, or endowments. Creating compelling case statements is crucial for successful appeals, combining concrete facts and statistics with inspiring vision statements and specific monetary targets that resonate with potential donors. Good donor relations are essential to fundraising success, regardless of gift type or size. professional fundraisers emphasize that retaining current donors typically requires significantly less effort and resource investment than securing new ones. Stewardship, the ongoing maintenance and nurturing of donor relationships, remains critical even for fully funded endowments or completed projects, as satisfied donors often become advocates who attract additional support and may contribute to future initiatives. This includes regular communication, recognition programs, impact reporting, and opportunities for donors to engage with the library's mission beyond their financial contributions.